Hello, Internet. I'm Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble.
All right, I'm ready, Player 1. Player 2, are you ready to do this?
Wait a second. Why you, Player 1?
Because I claimed it. I called dibs. If you were Player 1, we wouldn't be having this discussion, would we?
I'll be honest. I was expecting you to say, what are we doing today, Matt? And I'll go, well, I'm just Player 1 ready. I don't know, Miles. I was still... The cogs are still turning, and I guess you were first off the mark.
It's an age-old debate, isn't it? Who gets to be Player 1? Who gets to be Mario, and who has to be Luigi? Did you have that in your family or with your friends growing up?
I guess the Player 1 often... They didn't necessarily get to be Mario, because you still needed to be first to get that box over there. I guess it's play one to start it on Mario. But anyway, it was more like you got control over, like, when things started, what race tracks you were doing. Like, so I think the play one was the guy with all the, or girl, with all the control.
Yeah, we, Bonnie and I recently got our hands on an original Nintendo that we found at Bonnie's parents' place, and
the NES.
Yes, the NES. A bunch of great games with it, and we went to play the first Super Mario Brothers, and Bonnie said, "But I get to be Mario." Carson never let me be Mario. I always had to be Luigi for years. So if we're going to play, I get to be Mario. And I thought that was funny. Like 20 years later, she still was holding on to the fact that she never got to be Mario.
Yeah.
Very good. Shout out to the family there. So if you haven't figured it out, we're going to be talking about Ready Player One. Steven Spielberg film based on the Ernest Cline novel. Matt, I know you're not a fan of books. Did you read this one?
No.
That I...
No.
To the surprise of no one. Well, yeah, I've been coming around to the books a little bit more recently. I've been trying to read a little bit more.
You've definitely softened on books. You used to be a very... I feel like we were started this podcast with a very similar position on books, and now you're reading them all over the place.
Yeah, I'm turning into an old man. We've had a couple of relaxing vacations in the last year or so. Went to Tahiti for our honeymoon, and that's prime reading environment. By a nice pool with a nice lagoon, some overpriced cocktails. Nothing better to wash down the $25 pina colada than a nice book. So I have read this one, and I really, really enjoyed it. It's probably one of my favorite books that I've read. Definitely one of the best recently released novels. It's a bit hard to... Stylistically, it's hard to compare to some classic novels, but out of, I guess, 21st century literature.
It's no To Kill a Mockingbird.
It's definitely one of my favorite books of this generation. So I was very excited to see what they did with the movie.
Yeah, so what was your favorite thing about the book?
Ooh, well, there's a number of elements. I guess... At its core, it was a really great adventure, and what took you from sort of page to page, chapter to chapter, was solving these puzzles. It kind of goes in depth into these, you're trying to find Easter eggs, basically, or little, work out little things, puzzles based on suggestions and hints from old movies, old video games, old books. I guess just to give people a brief overview, if they haven't watched the book or the movie, we're in the future. I think it's about 2044, and it's kind of a dystopian future. Things aren't going too well for Earth. So a lot of people are escaping from the real world into a virtual world called the Oasis. And in the Oasis, it's a little bit sort of like a virtual reality video game, but it's very immersive, very realistic. You can be whoever you want to be, whatever you want to be, travel to all the kinds of crazy planets. And inside the game is hidden an Easter egg worth, what is it, millions or billions of dollars? Basically,
I think it's a trillion. Is it a trillion? Does it go up to trillions?
Might even be trillions. It's a lot of cash. You could that's a lot of gold class tickets at event cinemas, essentially. And yeah. the guy
who offers the prize, he sort of stumbles on it and he starts off going, "Oh, you win like $3 million." I'm like, "Oh boy, that's just winning three seasons of Survivor. That doesn't seem like a big deal." And then he said, "Oh, no, sorry, I mean trillion." And I'm like, "Okay, that the stakes are raised now."
That's all it takes. Just a misspoken sentence or spelling error to really up the stakes of a storyline. The owner's hidden this in there, and basically he says, "I've created this. If you can find this hidden Easter egg, you get all this money, and you also get control of the Oasis because you've proved yourself to be a worthy character, worthy hunter or gunter." They call themselves egg hunters, which gets shortened to gunter. And so I just thought that the solving of the puzzles, the hunt for this treasure, the really kind of clever ways that they went about it really hooked me in. And if I would put myself on the nerd spectrum, and I'll ask you this as well, Matt, I would say I'm sort of a light to moderate nerd. So I understood a decent amount of the references, but not all, because it gets pretty in depth. So even though I didn't get everything, I did like the sort of the how it immersed you in that world. Matt, where would you place yourself on that spectrum? How much were you able to immerse yourself in it?
Place you.
Okay, well, you can do that. You can place me, and then I'll place you.
Sort of, yeah, probably go more the moderate than the light. Where would I go? Maybe sort of moderate. Maybe like a hair under you, maybe. Like maybe a little bit less of a nerd than you are.
I'd say we're pretty similar in terms of our movies and books.
Yep.
But perhaps I've got a little bit more into the gaming than you have.
Yes, you're more into gaming than me. Yes, I'm trying to think of what I'm into a bit more than you. The Muppets.
You're
not sure if that's nerdy though.
You've probably gone further back with your television. I'm pretty solid through my 90s, 2000s. You've probably watched more 80s and 70s TV shows than I have.
I've seen more Cheers. Yeah, I've seen more Cheers. And I feel like maybe also, like, I'm a bit more into fantasy than you are, probably. A bit more like Lord of the Rings and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I like fantasy, but I'm probably more sci-fi inclined than fantasy. But I can go either way.
Okay. Cool. So this it's a sci-fi movie or book or whatever, but it does have fantasy elements. There's like the guy looks a bit like a wizard and all these sorts of things. And it actually, this like whole egg hunting thing, well, not the egg hunting, but this prize, which is pretty much not just the $1 trillion, but you get to run the Oasis. You are owning the company if you find this thing. It reminded a bit of a, gave me a bit of like Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory or Charlie in the Chocolate Factory vibes. You're sort of like, this guy is looking to hand over like the keys to the chocolate factory, and someone needs to find that golden ticket and pass the tests of the chocolate factory in order to inherit it.
Yeah, it's you know, rather than a contest like The Apprentice, it's kind of like The Boss. You go through all these challenges. You don't just get hired as an apprentice. You become the owner. You become the CEO.
Yeah. I also like with this, what I was excited about this movie is, I don't know if we've done a Steven Spielberg podcast ever before.
And for those at home who might not be familiar with Steven Spielberg, give us a quick introduction, Matt.
Well, he is a somewhat notable director for some big films back in the day, back in the 80s.
Yeah. I thought that's way back. I thought you were going to say War Horse.
I was going to say, like, Jaws and E.T. and things like that. But that might have been 90s, I don't know. But I think it was 80s.
Yeah.
80s, 90s, that sort of time. The time that this movie really calls back to. And since then, they then did Schindler's List, which did very well at the Oscars on picture, director, all those sorts of things. And that sort of, like, ushered him into, like, I feel like the last sort of 10, 15, 20 years, he just made Oscar vehicles. Like, he's done War Horse, some movie about a horse in the war. He's done Munich, a movie about a guy at the Munich Olympic Games and terrorism and, like, killing Jewish people. And The Post, a story about the Washington Post exposing Nixon.
Bridge of Spies.
Yeah, something about spies on a bridge. I didn't see Bridge of Spies. I don't really know what that one's about, but it looked pretty Oscar-y to me. So I got, like, Lincoln, a movie about Abraham Lincoln. Like, and I sort of feel like I like that he's not – this is not an Oscar movie. This is not a movie he's just making going, okay, let's just throw a Meryl Streep on a bridge with some Russian spies and have some thing, like, happen. Someone gets sick or something. Like, it's like, oh, okay, this is like just a fun movie, blockbuster thing, maybe even a callback to the kinds of movies he was making back in the 80s.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think he'll, it's, this does kind of feel more like perhaps E.T. or one of those, or Hook, or Jurassic Park, sort of, not necessarily children's movies, but sort of like, you know, kind of like PG action adventure, really kind of take you to another world. It's kind of has sort of like, has that sense of sort of like innocent wonder and abandon and kind of like the magic of movies.
Steven Spielberg, I think it's probably fair to say the past 20 years, he hasn't made many movies that are fun. Like Munich, Bridge of Spies, The Post, not War Horse, not fun movies.
No, I would say, that probably started around Saving Private Ryan, which is actually excellent. And not to say that some of those other films weren't good too, but I agree a lot of them were kind of marketed as kind of, yeah, sort of like industry films, you know, like, oh, this is going to be talked about, you know, during award season, as opposed to just like, grab your kids, you gotta go.
Yeah. Yeah, so I like, not all those movies are bad. I don't begrudge Steven Spielberg for making movies like that, but it's nice for him to make a fun movie again, I feel.
And it's interesting because the book references him a lot. So the owner, the creator of Oasis was obsessed with all kinds of, trivia from back in the day, especially the 80s. So Spielberg's one of his big references. And unfortunately, a lot of those get removed from the film, I guess because Steven Spielberg didn't want to be self-referential. I guess he's kind of modest. And there are lots of other references that they could focus on because it is a reference-heavy book. Yeah, source material has a lot of other go-tos. But it was interesting to see that was removed from the film version of the story.
Steven Spielberg didn't want to give up the rights to his stuff.
It's like, well, yeah, I'll direct this for $20 million, but if you want to reference my previous work, it's going to cost you another $15 million.
Okay, so let's delve into the Oasis now. It's a world which, so like this film is like real people, but when they're in the Oasis, which is most of the movie, there's sort of these avatars, and it's almost like an animated movie.
Yeah, so it was interesting to see how they would balance that, because a lot of the searching, the adventure, and even the relationships that get formed don't get formed and don't happen in the real world. They happen within the virtual world within the Oasis. So I was interested to see how much time that they would spend between the two, because more kind of crazy things can happen in the virtual world, more interesting things can happen in the virtual world, but perhaps it's harder to connect as an audience, you know, that all of a sudden it becomes an animated film, and then we're cutting back to this guy playing, you know, rather than, you know, you go, am I connecting with Parzival, or am I connecting with Wade? And I think they did a pretty good job of getting in the action and showing you what happens in the Oasis, but I understand why they kind of focused on the real world, just because I think it's easier to connect to those characters and actors.
Now, Jonathan, did you, like, let's say we're in 2044, which, just to put this in time speak, this is 5 years before Ryan Gosling is Blade Runnering around the world. Saving people from another crisis. In 2044, would you be in the Oasis? Would this be something you would be into? Would you be hanging out there a lot?
That's a good question. I do like to game a lot, and I like a couple of different types of games. Usually my favorites are either single-player games with a good story, that feel a little bit more like an interactive movie, because that's why I love movies and books and TV shows. I just love getting hooked in by great stories. So I like that in a video game as well, but where I also get to feel like a part of it. In terms of big scale sort of online multiplayer games where you take on a persona, like role-playing games, that's not something I've really gotten into. And I haven't tried too much virtual reality myself as of yet. Having said that, if this were a real thing and virtual reality games and the Oasis were that far along, I'd definitely give it a try, because it looked pretty fun.
Yeah, and I feel like, and I didn't get much of a sense of this from the movie, it seems like everyone's on it. Now, I don't know if that's just because this is the story it was telling, and there's like millions of people that just like have regular jobs and don't really buy into the Oasis at all. Like, but it seems like everyone's on it, and I feel like it's sort of the thing with social media too. If everyone's on it, it's hard not to get in there. It's hard not to get in on the mix. So I feel like I'd want to be a part of it. I'd want to be in there, but I could see myself getting a bit bored in there too, because it's like a bit like real life, a bit purposeless. Like, right? Like.
Well, luckily they put that egg in there for you to hunt for, or else the movie would be pretty boring.
Yeah, I'm like, finally, something to do, something to try to win.
You just got to find an egg in the real world. Matt, what's your real world egg to hunt?
I don't know. I don't understand too bleak. Like, I think life is purposeful.
Maybe it's success in podcasting.
Yes, it's that 10,000th podcast or whatever is the egg. But anyway, would you have an avatar? Like, what would your avatar be? Would you want to have an avatar which is like a slightly cooler version of you? Or would you want to be like some sexy lady or a monster or animal or something, Jonathan? What would you want to be?
That's a good question. I would definitely be Driver. I would be Ryan Gosling in Drive.
Oh, yeah, the scorpion jackets.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd be good at the first game to unlock the key too, because the first event in the movie is a race that you have to win.
Yes. Yeah, you need to be a bit of a thinker to crack it, because it's not like how you think you'd win a race.
No.
So, like, you'd be good at the driving bit, but maybe. Would we team up? Do you reckon we should team up in this oasis to find the egg? I feel like you need a bit of a team.
See, that's a sort of contentious thing in the story, the concept of clans. So you've probably heard of that in reference to other games. People join up. They form clans for various games. Well, in this, some people do make clans in order to share their knowledge, in order to try and find the first key and solve the puzzles. But other people look down on clans. They think, no, this is a single player game. Only one person gets to rule the oasis. And that's actually Parzival's approach. So when he meets Artemis, the girl in the story, that's something he's very conflicted about, because he likes her and he respects her, but that sort of pride and his philosophy to the approach is that you should never team up with anybody else. So, I don't know.
And then by the second key, he seems to be like just working with five people and it's not really like an issue anymore.
Yeah.
like, it's a big deal for that first key, and the second one's like, yeah, us five needs here. I think it's sort of a bit like Survivor in that, like, there's the idea of you want your alliance, but at the end of the day, only one person can win from that alliance. And, like, it's sort of like, at some point, the claws will need to come out. I just thought, since you're versing, and in the movie they're versing this corporation that has hundreds of people on contract to try to find this, like, it takes a bit of the, like, I feel like you've got to have a clan. You're taking on, like, a corporation with unlimited expenses and pretty much unlimited people. You need a few minds, I think, working up.
It seems like the lesser of two evils. Once the big bad corporation starts getting seemingly closer to finding the keys, all of a sudden teaming up with a couple of your mates doesn't seem like such a an immoral decision.
Yeah.
So who would you be, Matt? What would your avatar be?
I think I'm not as big into the anonymity sort of thing as some people are. Like, I don't know. I'm pretty happy with myself. I don't need to hide who I am. So I'd probably just do, like, a slightly cooler version of me. Is probably, like, you know,
you just get a suit that you couldn't afford in real life.
Yeah, probably. Like, I might, like, give myself, like, you know, like, wings or a tail or so, I don't know, something cool like that or whatever. Like, I don't know, just, I don't know.
it'd just be you, but with a really nice mustache.
Yeah, I don't know, like, maybe a slightly different, like, skin. Like, it was, I don't know. The good thing is you can sort of change, mix it up every now and then, can't you? Like, you don't have to be married to what you look like. So I might, you know, what if, like, it was just, like, me, but each week I had a different, like, animal tail or something like that?
You had a different hat with something funny written on the hat.
Yeah, like the guy from 30 Rock.
Matt would be Judah Freelander in the Oasis.
Anyway, yeah. So I don't know. I wouldn't like pick something too removed from who I am. at least I feel like as I got older, I might want to like just keep the same age though. Like maybe a bit of like an ageless like avatar.
Yes, that would be cool. That would be cool. I mean, everybody wants to be 25 forever, so that would definitely be a good avatar, especially once you're a bit older. Because I'm pretty sure people of all ages are in the Oasis.
What would you think about dating in the Oasis? Like, you're obviously married now, obviously, but like, let's imagine you're not married. Let's imagine you're a single guy. Would you date in the Oasis? Because this Percival or Persplex or whatever his name is. he falls in love in the Oasis, and his mate gives him some good advice. He goes, oh, that could be like a 400-pound, like, guy sitting in his basement. the person the person who was, I don't know, hacking Hillary's emails or whatever.
Yeah. It's a good question. I think in some ways we already are experiencing that with online dating, you know, on Tinder or whatever. You see people's, you know, best photos with the best lighting and best airbrushing or whatever, and you get to know them, and you, based on the funniest things that they can, you know, think to type back to you, and then you meet them in person, and they don't look anything like their profile picture. They're not anywhere near as funny when they can't text after having, you know, spent 15 minutes asking their friends, what's the funniest response to this question? Whereas in the Oasis, at least I guess you're prepared for a surprise because you know it's not going to be a dragon or Kevin Spacey, you know, whoever you meet in the Oasis. So I don't know. It is tricky. It is always hard to... I think you can definitely connect with people online. You can definitely, yeah, I don't know how to phrase it. I'm a little bit skeptical you can fall in love online. I feel like you can put some building blocks in there and get started, but I'm not sure if I think you can ever truly be in love with someone if you've never met them in person.
Yeah, I feel like finally get develop the crush, but I'd be quickly moving that to a Skype call outside of the Oasis, at least. Yeah, but that's pretty. I actually went on an online date a couple of years ago, and we're meeting at the Circular Quay Ferry Wharf to get a ferry to Manly Beach. So it was a nice. Nice date, I think I'd organise. But anyway, when she found me, she came up to me and she said, "Oh, you look like your photo. That's great."
And you're like, "Well,
I was like, oh, good."
I was considering putting up either a photo of myself or someone else, and I decided to go with myself.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Matt, there you go for the listeners at home. An honest online dater.
Yes.
So, yeah, if you happen to come across his profile, just know that's the real deal.
So, despite the warnings, he still has a bit of an erotic dance with her in the nightclub. And... I don't know how far ahead to get with this, like, storyline and everything. Like, maybe we make this a spoiler-free podcast. I don't want to jump ahead too far in the storyline.
Yeah, we didn't give a spoiler warning at the start, so for now we'll keep it spoiler-free. But if there's something in particular you want to talk about, maybe we can throw a spoiler section in at the end if there's anything pressing on your mind.
Yeah, I think we should be fine. I'm probably more interested in the whole concept of the movie than necessarily like talking about how it ends.
Mm.
Yeah. But do you reckon, like, it'd be like part of me's like the egg thing I'd be really excited by, but there's only one winner, and I feel like I'm probably not good enough at gaming to be the one person to get the egg.
Yeah, it's not an easy challenge. It's not like most video games where you're like, ah, oh, you know, if I just keep on playing and dying and playing and dying and for a few hours or a few days, I'll eventually figure out how to beat it. This game lasts years, and I'm not sure if you really get a sense of the time in the movie, but at the start, you know, thousands if not millions of people are like, oh, I'm going to find the egg. And they spend all this time in the library and watching and playing and researching. and I don't know how many years go by, but it might be like 5-10 years, and no one's even found the first clue. And it's only the hardcore people like Wade, like Percival, that that don't stop looking. So, yeah, you definitely have to. It's not a game. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah, it's like it has to be your job pretty much. And if you told me, hey, there's this competition, there's this game, do you want to play it? And there's a corporation that is spending millions of dollars and investing most of their resources into winning this game, and they are not been able to get past the first clue, I wouldn't be feeling great about my chances of winning this game.
Yeah, those seem like some long odds. Perhaps to explain... I was just going to say, perhaps to explain some of that motivation, I don't think this really comes across in the film. In the book, the future's a little bit more dystopian. Things are pretty bad for the majority of the public. And so the appeal of being able to find this as a way to get out of poverty is attractive to a lot of people. And so that's why some of the people just don't let go of this hope years on. And but having money is important in the game. In the movie, it kind of looks like you can all go anywhere, wherever you want, do whatever. But in the book, it's a bit more of a slog just to travel from one planet to another. You really have to save up. You really have to beat certain games or challenges to get those points to go from place to place. So, Wade's definitely one of the dedicated ones.
I think also, like, what the film does quite well is, like, showing the stakes of, if this company wins, this is going to be bad news. Like, this is a bad company. They collect, like, anyone that's in any debt to their company, they pretty much keep as prisoners against their will indefinitely. Like, you really want to, regardless of how much of a sense you have for how the world's going at the moment, you definitely want the power taken away from this company.
Yeah, I don't think they delve too much into it, but there were a few interesting moments that made like a little bit of commentary. One of them was quite funny, where they were pitching something new in the Oasis, and they have all these advertisements and pop-ups and like ways to make money. You got to like click out of this, and this. So I thought that was funny, kind of like the very overt cash grabs. And then the sort of less funny, more serious aspect that they touch on was that they would get people in debt, and then they would tell them that they could work their way out of it, but they eventually just sort of got put into a life of servitude. And so, perhaps like drawing like some parallels in sort of like predatory loaning in the real world. So I don't think it was a particularly preachy movie, but they did touch on a few things, which I thought was well integrated.
And it made me really want the company to lose.
Yeah.
Like, it really made them not just like, oh, I like Percival and I want him to win over like the company that, oh yeah, that'd be boring if a big company won that wanted to put pop-ups. But I was sort of like, oh, they have to lose. Like, there's a lot at stake here in this egg hunt. I do wonder, and I was thinking about the egg hunt strategy and maybe a flaw to the game, Jonathan, is, like, it does seem like if we were, like, let's say I'm playing the game, I'm in there, got my red panda tail, a nice suit, snipping around, and this is competition. It does seem like my best strategy would be wait for the first key to be found. Then it seems like word travels pretty quickly how it was found, so I can just go then do the cheat, do the thing, then find out the second key was found and do that. So I was gonna be chilling, drinking, saving up my money, getting focusing on other things. And then it's really only the third key where you really need to be first to the key. It's sort of like The Amazing Race. Like, doesn't really matter what you come on leg 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, as long as you don't get eliminated, as long as you don't die, it's just who wins that final leg. Or a bit like Mario Kart. It doesn't matter what you come in on the first two laps, it's the third lap where you win the thing.
Yeah. I agree with that. I thought that that was a possibly somewhat flawed system. I think the only thing to counteract that was you get a reward for being the first to unlock a key, and then I think you get points or something for everybody else that does it afterwards, but it's less so. So there's a slight benefit, you know, you might get equipment or money that will perhaps help you, you know, in the race to then get the second key and the third key, so...
Yeah. But I could have spent, like, 10 years rather than trying to figure out the first clue, 10 years just working to make that money, right?
Yeah.
It's probably a lot. It's probably a lot of money, like... So I guess maybe not, but, yeah, it still seems like everyone was pretty quick to get the key after the first... So, yeah, so...
You definitely can't rest on your lead. Once you get the first one, you need to keep going.
Yeah. So, there you go. That's the, I still think, if this ever becomes a thing, that would be my recommendation for people. Just wait for the third key, clue, and then you need to really, really be trying to win the thing.
Cool.
So,
were there any other aspects or that you wanted to touch on in the about the Oasis or the story or the film in general?
Not really. I'm happy to go to the verdict now, to be honest.
Cool.
Okay, because I think the thoughts I have on the film will come out in my verdict. So I think to save people from having to hear me say the same thing twice.
Sure. All right. Well, Ready Player One, I was really excited for it because, as I said, I was a big fan of the book. And they made a lot of changes to the book, which I was prepared for because a lot of it is solving puzzles and discussing old movies and games. And I think you needed to up the pace a bit. You needed to make it more visual. So they changed some of the challenges to get the keys, which I understand why they did that, and I was okay with that. I just thought they weren't quite as clever. I just felt like a lot of the solutions ended up being, oh, I just thought of this, or, oh, remember this book, you do this. And it just kind of solving the puzzles seemed just a little bit less satisfying to me than I remember in the book. But I thought it did a good job of... capturing the tone and the world. I thought it was fairly funny at times. I thought T.J. Miller's cameo as the kind of Skeletor-looking guy that had the orb. I thought he was hilarious. I thought he was provided some of the funniest scenes in the movie.
He's good.
I thought it tended a little bit towards the nostalgic and schmaltzy sort of side, which wasn't always a home run for me, but I didn't mind it because, you know, it was a family film and nothing was so cheesy that it completely, you know, took me out of the experience. I'm just trying to think of some of the other things they changed. They cut out a scene with a sex doll. I guess.
I was disappointed. Was that the scene you were looking forward to the most?
It's a cornerstone plot point in the book. I guess Spielberg said, nope, I'm not doing Oscar bait this time. No, I'm going to... as many awards as it would win me, we're going to have to cut that scene. Yeah, I thought it came together really well, and I really liked Mark Rylance as... is it Og? One of the two creators of the Oasis. I thought the end was really touching. So, I thought there were a few hits and misses, but overall I enjoyed it. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
Nice. Yeah, I thought this was a... also, what did you think about it? Sorry, this is another little thing. Like, do you think it like was realistic of how many 80s and 90s references there were in this, like, super popular, like, number one sort of investment and, like, business? Like, the number one company is something based off 80s and 90s references in 2044?
I'm trying to remember the timeline, like how long the Oasis has been around, what the age of the creators were.
Yeah, it might check out. I just don't think if there was like today a like massive, likely popular virtual reality like game simulation, it probably wouldn't be based on sort of 50s and 60s references.
Well, let's see. If the creator was, say, 20 in 1990 and they died in 2030, that would make them die when they were 60. So that kind of make... I don't know how old he was when he died. Maybe 70. I think that checks out.
Okay. Jonathan's calling it, tick. Okay, that's good. I thought this was by no means a great movie. This is not going to be one of the all-time great sci-fi, fantasy, adventure sort of things. But it sort of all worked really well. I thought it was really fun. I liked that it was, like, you know, you've got the three keys and challenges, and that will lead you to the egg, and there's bad guys, and you really don't like them, but then there's the good guys, and they sort of come together as a bit of a team, and I liked that, and I liked how there was real world stuff, and then the Oasis stuff, and that, like, I just think everything sort of worked well enough that it was just a really fun movie to watch, and a good story, and I also liked that this sort of movie where you have these, I'm sort of glad it wasn't like some of these series of movies where it's sort of like, okay, we're going to have Ready Player One, the first key. And then at the end of that, like, okay, next year you better get ready for Ready Player One.
Part two.
Crystal Key. Like, and then, yeah. Then the third key divide into three movies to make more money. Like, and it's like, we had the whole, like, sort of story play out in one movie. I enjoyed that immensely. So that was cool. So yeah, I'm going to give it a 7.5 out of 10. Like, I don't think anything in it was at a like amazing level, but it was all good.
Yeah, look, no one's saying Steven Spielberg's going to be the next Denis Villeneuve. So let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Look, to be honest, I prefer this to most Steven Spielberg movies I've seen in the past 10 years.
Let's see if I can flick quickly through. Lincoln was pretty good. I enjoyed Lincoln.
I didn't really like Lincoln that much. But anyway.
Catch Me If You Can. I like that. That's going back to 2002.
That's more than 10 years ago, buddy.
So there you go. One of Spielberg's better recent outings, according to Screen Verdict.
Yeah.
All right, very good.
I haven't seen, to be fair, haven't seen Bridge of Spies, so
it was fine. I'd rank it in there with The Post and Munich, and it's worth watching. But I don't know if you'll go nuts for it.
It's no Ready Player One.
No, definitely not.
They should nominate him for this. If they're going to nominate him for all those other Oscar-mainy things, why not nominate him for this?
I guess the simple answer would be because it's not Oscar-baity.
And I think the next person will come back at me going, and he didn't get nominated for The Post last year.
No, yeah. I thought it was funny how...
I'm not nominated for Bridge of Spies either. So...
I thought they did that... I thought that joke was funny that Seth Meyers did at the Golden Globes, where he said something about the post, and someone walks out with, like, you know, six Golden Globes in their arms, and they're like, no, no, you have to wait. And then it didn't win anything, like, all award season.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like it was the perfect joke, but no awareness that, like, it's sort of like, it's the kind of joke that would have been great if it had gone on to win everything. Like, you know, have you've seen Hamilton, right?
Yes.
So James Corden was hosting the Tonys the year Hamilton sort of won everything, and he did a bit of a Hamilton spoof to open with. So, like, you know, instead of going out and the line in the song is, "My name's Alexander Hamilton, and there's a million things I haven't done, but just you wait, just you wait." And James Corden comes up and goes, "My name's James Corden, and these are the things I'll be awarding." And he holds up a Tony, and then the Hamilton cast all walk up to him, and then he points at all of them and goes, "Just you wait, just you wait." I thought that was quite good, because everyone knew Hamilton was winning everything, and that's why the joke landed. Unfortunately, like, I don't think anyone was predicting the post to win anything.
At least not after the Globes. Like, it seems... It was like a 50-50 joke at the time, and then in retrospect, it just seems silly.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think one year at the Emmys, too, can't remember who it was, the host, like, said, "Oh, we'll just get this out of the way," and when he gave Jeffrey Tambor the Emmy at the beginning of the show.
Ellen DeGeneres had one, it was the 12 Years a Slave year. She said, "Oh, so much intrigue tonight as to who's going to take Best Picture. Is it gonna go to 12 Years a Slave, or is the Academy racist?"
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is kind of housekeeping, just arbitrary awards show to talk, but we hope you're enjoying it.
Anything else in housekeeping? I don't really have much.
No, I don't think so. We talked a little bit about what might be coming up in our ESVs podcast. But just in case the people missed that one, which you should definitely go listen to. It's definitely one of the biggest podcasts of the year. What do we have to look forward to? Is there anything you'd like to podcast on, Matt?
Well, I've seen a few movies lately. The Isle of Dogs.
Ooh, I've seen The Isle of Dogs.
Oh, great. I didn't have a lunch now. We could just do a podcast on that right now. Isle of Dogs, The Death of Stalin, Manu Iannucci.
Very good.
Two of our favourite guys, Wes Anderson, Manu Iannucci. Then I'm seeing The Quiet Place on Friday, or A Quiet Place. So seeing that, I know you're a big John Krasinski fan. and so they're the sort of the movies, and well, Avengers, the Infinity Wars. I'll surely see that in the next week or two. So that's the movie sort of side of things, and TV shows. I know you're catching up on a few of the old HBO ones, so we might do a few of them.
Curb Enthusiasm, Barry. Game of Thrones, I'm behind on. Westworld just started, so...
Yeah. Have you watched it yet? Have you watched the Westworld thing?
No, last night we watched Curb and Barry, but I'm definitely going to be catching up on Westworld too.
I liked it. Good kickoff.
Cool.
Westworld, Portlandia's final season's just about, like, wrapped up, so it might be good to have a bit of a look back on that show. An SV award winner.
Yeah.
Well,
very good. Lots to look forward to, and if there's something specific you want to hear about, just let us know. facebook.com/screenverdictpodcast. We'll probably make your podcast dreams come true.
Yes.
Topical.
Is that a ready reference?
It would be good if it was. Let's just assume it was. It's a dense book with a lot of references. It's very possible. All right. Well, until then, guys, we hope you enjoyed the podcast, and we'll catch you next week.
Over and out.